Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Take a Stab at It. I'm your host, John Hoyer, and with me is...
Jason Bartsch.
And also, we have another special guest for you.
Hey, everyone, this is Trevor Charity. How's everybody doing tonight?
All right, so a little bit of details behind the scenes. We actually recorded an episode with Trevor already that's going to be released in a few weeks. So we already explained him, so we're not going to do it again. So you're just going to...
You're not worth two explanations, Trevor. No, we don't have that kind of upload space.
We hadn't planned that he would be on the show again, but like, you know, bed bugs or herpes, just kind of stuck around.
Yeah, Trevor, malignant growth charity over here.
John's actually auditioning him to be my replacement. That's
you're unreplaceable because your name is in the artwork. So
Trevor, why don't you? Yeah. And my wife did the artwork. So she, I don't know. If you paid her enough, she'd probably remove my name. I don't know.
I know. I know how to use Microsoft Paint, so I think that'll be okay.
All right, so our friend Trevor over here, he is a man who has many interests, including knowledge of the occult, witches, satanic things.
And barking dogs.
Yeah, why don't you introduce your dog to us?
Yes, that is Ozzy, a seven-month-old black lab. He's not getting his way today, so he's being a little shit. So,
Well, 7 months, he's still a puppy.
He should know better.
Yeah, but like what John said, yeah, I do know some stuff about the occult and more specifically about this, like witchcraft, which is what today's subject matter is about. So with witchcraft, you know, obviously it's the practice of spells, rituals, different incantations of stuff. And with witches, obviously they're the practitioners of witchcraft. Primarily, that's the female counterpart of it. They usually practice two schools of magic. There's the white magic.
What's the male version?
It's usually called warlock. It depends on what kind of, like, you know, sometimes people, they just call them male, like witches, you know, but some people call them warlocks. But with witches, they usually practice two schools. There's the white magic, which is more selfless and usually is like healing and just never really like, harmful. It's not harmful whatsoever. Usually it's like the self gain, like boost confidence or like charm people. But then the black magic, obviously, which is the one that always gets the highlights of everything, that is like self harm, trying to gain immortality, necromancy follows under that. And then there's the self name spells, which is usually with using your name to channel like magic, because like when with your name, it has power behind it. So once you have someone's full name, you can like pretty much control them.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then obviously, you know, the most well-known thing about witches is the Salem witch trials. And obviously we know that some innocent young ladies and men were murdered, you know, in cold blood because they were quote unquote witches and they believed a group of females that, you know, said, oh yeah, they're witches and all that stuff. And like, there's actually a lot of like, a lot of people have lost their lives because of witch, not just from witchcraft and stuff, not just from America, but in Europe. One of the most biggest thing that came from it is a book that probably has the most metal name in the world. I'm going to butcher it, so I do apologize. It's the Malefic Malapicarium or Hammer of the Witches.
All right, so mute his mic.
Sorry.
I don't know why I said that out loud. I'm the one with the controls.
But yeah.
All right. Well, very interesting stuff. I hope we don't offend any witches.
Yes, please don't hurt
actually
me.
If you're a witch, call into the show. Well, we want to talk to you.
Do we have a number for the show? Is that something you set up?
It's 908. No. I start to give Trevor's number.
So with witches, there can be good witches, right?
Yeah. Well, obviously most witches are actually pretty good. Like they're not really evil, like how they make the movies sound. They're mostly like, you know, doing rituals during different phases of the moon. A lot of times it's more of like self-cleansing and, nothing really like malicious how like, you know, the movies make it out to be. Like they're all not wicked witches of the West. They're more like, you know, people who get together and stuff. And like there's actually, you know, different religions, religious witches. Like there's Christian witches, there's Buddhist witches, there's Islamic witches. It doesn't really matter. It's more of like a practice rather than a religion.
So do you have to practice spells to be a witch?
Yeah, that's mostly the thing. Although there's
the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. But then obviously there's more Wiccans who are more practitioners of channeling like gods and goddesses. Like a lot of them more like Norse and pagan gods and stuff like that. So that's when like more of the religious aspect comes in. But they're not really harmful. Like, I mean, you do on occasion see like a group of witches have a ritual to do blah 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 this, and usually it's more towards a gain and like just something political, like, you know, something that's going on in the world to try to change the course.
So if you want to become a witch, do you have to commit up front to being a good or bad witch? So it, for instance, the film we're discussing tonight, which is the original Suspiria from 1977, it deals with a coven of witches, and there's a line at one point in the movie that a character says these witches can only change people's lives for bad and not for good. So if there can be good witches, do you have to either commit to be a good or a bad witch, or can you kind of flow between them as needed?
From what everything I believe, you can kind of flow between them, but I know there's in some, you know, folklore and stuff, obviously with witchcraft, some of the times, like if you have a spell or a hex or a curse, it usually can come back tenfold to the caster. So like there obviously is some buyer beware kind of
There's always a catch.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So how do, this might be getting too deep. I don't know a lot about this subject. How would like a witch's spell differ from something like a wizard or something like that? Is that, or do they inherently have magic, whereas like a witch is just learning these spells?
Right. So obviously like with what wizards and all that stuff, usually it's like really quick, you know, like zip zop doobity bop, and then just boom, it just happens. no relation to Bill Cosby.
How did that go?
Zip zop zoobity bop. No, it's good though. No, but like with witches and stuff, you have to sorry, I'm just laughing. You have to actually do a ritual and use ingredients and altars and everything. So you have to channel it rather than just be like, you know, have a wand or
anything. It's not just words and flailing the wand around. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Like that's the thing with, like, you know, with Harry Potter, everyone thinks that, you know, you just have a wand and you can, you know, boom, there's the spell. But no, they kind of half right, because a lot of times you have to combine ingredients and stuff to create spells and stuff. So
I can't wait for the end of the episode when we try our own spell. So
exactly. Yeah. If anybody knows any spells to silent little dog, then give me that, please.
Let's move on to what we've been watching. All right, Trevor, why don't you start us off? What have you been watching?
Yes, I've been watching this movie Spiral. And no, it's not the Chris Rock Saw reboot. It is a movie that is currently on Shudder. That it's about two guys. They're a same-sex couple. Their names are Malik and Aaron. And they move to a small town with Aaron's 16-year-old daughter. And so they move into a small town. It's like everything seems pretty good and all stuff. However, one night Malik watches a cult ritual happen in the neighbor's house, and things just tailspin, you know, downward after that.
So we got it's a movie about a cult. Again, it kind of matches.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is I was going to say two episodes in a row, but chronologically it probably won't end up that way, but
we're Christopher Nolan-ing it, you know, just switching it up.
That sounds interesting. So the film I watched recently, my wife and I, we like to, but before we fall asleep, like to put kind of movies that look a little silly on sometimes to fall asleep to. And recently we watched a film from 1988. Mm-hmm. Shout out to 1988. Good year for being born. It's called Night of the Demons, and it's kind of one of those so bad it's good movies that's kind of become a cult classic. Wasn't very well received at the time, but it's a group of high schoolers that decide to throw a party inside this abandoned funeral parlor. Naturally, they decide to perform a seance and they unlock, you know, hell, and this demon comes and kind of goes after him. And it takes place on Halloween. So they basically have to survive all of Halloween. So it's like all these teenagers dressed in these silly Halloween costumes being chased by demons. And I don't know, it's good. It's one of those good kind of midnight horror movies.
Hell yeah.
So John, you told me you watched this movie called The Beyond. What's that about?
Yes. So in keeping with this week's episode, I watched a movie by another famous Italian horror director, Lucio Fulci. So his film is The Beyond, and it's about a hotel in Louisiana that, surprisingly, is one of the seven gateways to hell.
Oh,
shocking.
So it's very gory. It's pretty silly, but it's also quite enjoyable, if that makes sense.
Interesting. When did that come out?
Think like 81, maybe.
Okay. So is it a kind of a similar gore style, I guess, to Argento? Is it?
He's a little bit more gory, but you have like tons of that like fake looking like red blood. It's like kind of a zombie movie, but then it also doesn't play by those rules fully. It does weird like surrealism. It's kind of interesting in that way.
So I know you mentioned one of the seven gates of hell in that. This is just a little side note. Did you know the town next to my hometown has a place called the Seven Gates of Hell, which has kind of had like got like a little kind of urban legend following to it?
Well, that's really interesting.
So the town is actually called Hellum. And so
right on the nose.
I guess the story, the legend kind of goes that there was a mental institution back in the woods that a fire broke out, and firefighters, it was so remote that firefighters couldn't reach it in time. So then everything kind of burnt down and, you know, it became like this kind of gateway to hell. And the rumor is that you kind of go back through the woods and there's all these different gates. And as legend has it, no one has ever made it through the seventh gate. It's interesting. It's like something a lot of people around here kind of know about. I walked back through there once. I think I was in high school, went back there with some friends. They have a lot of like no trespassing signs now because it's become kind of like a spot for, you know, kids to go. And
did you make it to the seventh gate?
We went through the first one and, you know, walked a little bit into the woods and then turned around. I don't know.
Baby.
There's a movie. It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it still is. It's called Toad Road. And it's actually based off of the Seven Gates of Hell in Hellum, PA. And a lot of it was shot right around there as well. So it's interesting. It's the movie's kind of out there. It's like a psychological horror. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. It's a kind of a fun little local legend.
Maybe we should, when we have a Patreon, if we get to a certain tier, we'll go to the...
Right, yeah, right. If people donate a certain amount, we try to go to all seven gates.
Exactly.
And then we should do an episode where we're recording while walking through the gates. And
yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah, exactly. That sounds really awesome.
If anything happens, we'll give them Trevor or his dog.
yeah, exactly. Well,
yeah, bring the dog.
Rest in power, Ozzy. Sorry, guys.
Because we all know he'll be the first to warn us if anything's weird and we won't listen. We'll just get annoyed and then one of us will die. I don't know which one. Trevor, you're the guest star, so the odds aren't in your favor.
Oh, yeah. And I'm the red shirt in this situation. Yeah.
Jason doesn't like ever look at me the same again because he sees me push Trevor.
All right. So now on to the main event, which is film Suspiria. So Suspiria follows this woman named Susie Banyan, who travels to Germany to attend the prestigious Tanz Dance Academy. And after a series of strange circumstances, including the disappearance of a former student, brutal murders, even a rainstorm of maggots, Susie soon discovers that her new school is also the home of a coven of witches. So can Susie dance her way out of this mess? Let's find out.
This is the corniest shit.
Oh my God. I love that. I love it. Oh my gosh.
All right. So Trevor, why don't you start us off? What did you think of the movie?
I thought it was fantastic. I love this, the, the pacing of it, obviously the music of it, Goblin.
Yeah, the score is awesome.
Yeah.
It's just so theatrical, and it's so like the set design, the colors, the lighting, everything. It's just, I don't know. It's pretty amazing. And I gotta mention that John generously bought me the Blu-ray.
You too?
I thought I was the only one. How many people have you bought this for, John? Come clean right now.
Just two of my closest friends.
That's actually fair.
That I'm lucky to have with me today.
We're just chums. That's all.
Wait, were you just planting the seeds for this podcast like a long time ago? I like, there's these series of flashbacks where everything you've purchased me has to do with this podcast. But anyway, the film looks absolutely stunning on Blu-ray. And well, like I know John and I were talking last night as I was watching it, and you mentioned that it almost looks like a modern film. I mean, there's some giveaways, you know, maybe makeup and some certain lighting and the film stock perhaps, but it just looks so beautiful. And I don't know, definitely check it out on Blu-ray if you get the chance.
Yeah, no. So of course, if I'm sending friends Blu-rays of the movie, I also loved it. I think it's like stylistically just one of the most beautiful and engaging kind of experiences for any horror movie I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like thematically, I think it's interesting how it smartly uses like fairy tale kind of aesthetics in the vein of Snow White to handle like weightier kind of topics like fascism and post-war Germany. What I love about it is that it's like a fun movie, but also kind of hints at like these darker kind of topics. So you can kind of have like a nice kind of like thriller element to it, but also there's a little bit more going on beneath the surface.
Yeah. No, that's a great comparison. The like a horror fairy tale is a great way to describe
it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just the set design is just crazy. And there's a lot of, they use a lot of blues and red lights in the in the film. And I think that works really well. It's
an interesting tidbit on the commentary I was listening to the other night. So apparently originally Argento wanted to have the dance school be of like teenagers, like younger teens. The producers and the money people kind of intervened and said, you should make them a little bit older. This is not might not go over as well with like younger kids. So what he did was he started to like try to subtly kind of create certain aesthetics to make it feel more childish, where it's like you have like the fairy tale aspect of like, you know, a girl in a new strange land. And they even had like the doorknobs, they even raised up so that way when the characters would be walking around, it would look like they're kind of smaller than they really are.
That's interesting.
I gotta tell you, I always thought that he had like a surplus of red, green, and blue gels, so that he's like, well, I might as well get my money's worth and just swallow them out.
Another thing I thought was interesting about the movie was how whenever you have any of these like death scenes or scenes where people are being attacked, you never actually see the assailant in full view. It's always like it's hinted at, you see from their perspective.
Yeah. And it's a very disorienting film, you know, everything, all these elements kind of tie together beautifully, the set design, the lighting, the score, the camera work. And it's really eerie. Like we're describing it as being like this really kind of bright fairy tale film, which it is, but it's also really unsettling. It's also, there's a lot of shadows, a lot of low key lighting. It's
very operatic.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to describe it. Operatic.
It felt like actually like a Broadway set, because like it actually uses like the blood. It's just pure red. It's not like, you know, movie blood where it's like dark and crimson. It's like stage blood.
Yeah, it tries to be accurate. It's more like almost stylized blood.
Right. Exactly.
It has a certain appeal to it though. Like it's the horror still comes across, but there's a certain like aesthetic value to it. I don't know.
Yeah. Fake blood's tough. I tried it before in some college projects. There is fake blood available, but I mean, I procrastinated on this, so I had to kind of come up with solutions and ended up using some sort of makeup, and a friend helped me out with it. And it wasn't until I was in post editing it that I realized that there was still some glitter remnants in whatever makeup brush they had used. So like when the light hit the blood a certain way, it was like bedazzled almost. kind of killed the effect a little bit.
That's like peak like Twilight era too. So like,
well, that's the effect I'm trying to go for, you know.
Well, actually, so Trevor and I worked on one of his short films at Northampton, and we had this one section where a character gets killed by Trevor's character, and he gets shot in the head, and Trevor wanted to put a little bit in a straw and just kind of push it out behind his head against the mirror that was behind him. And when we were about to do it, I just yelled, "Throw the whole thing!"
Right.
And then he hesitated. I just, "Throw it!" And then he threw it, and it was a really good shot. It looks like he really got shot in the head. Like,
right. Like, I was trying to go for like a splatter effect, but it not only did the splatter effect, but it ran too. Like, it's like, bleh, and then just came down the wall.
And after we recorded it and we like edited, we were like showing everyone, like, "Look how cool this is. We're like the greatest guys ever." All right, so why don't we start getting into some of the plot of the film?
Yeah, let's talk about a couple scenes. So we open with Susie, our protagonist. She's a young American student who's coming to Germany to follow her dreams of becoming a dancer. And when she arrives at the academy for the first time, it's just pouring down rain, torrential downpour. And as she's getting out of the cab, a fellow student named Pat is leaving the academy very hurriedly. She's in a panic, and she says something to someone in the door that we can't really make out.
But she doesn't seem happy.
Off. Yeah. No, she is not cool with whatever is going on inside the confines of this academy. So she runs off, and then she ends up at a friend's house, right, John?
She goes to a friend's house, and she's soaked.
She's telling her friend, like, hinting that something is going on at this dance academy. She had to get out of there.
Yeah, so she's, like, very upset. And then when she's left alone in the room, wouldn't you know it, some sort of shadowy figure breaks through the glass, starts choking her.
Yeah, no, so they end up on the roof, and this apartment building is just insane. It's stained glass, like skylight window at the very top of this huge apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
And
so the assailant starts just stabbing her like crazy. And then we even get like an insert shot where you see her beating heart, and he just stabs the heart.
We're talking extreme close up of a beating heart. She's been stabbed like 10 times already. It's amazing that the heart is still beating like at a normal
those
rate.
Dancers are,
yeah, they have a very low resting heart rate. That's true.
Her roommate now is hearing the commotion.
Yeah, she's like banging on neighbors' doors. And
yeah, so then the killer guy wraps up Pat with wire and then throws her out of the skylight. She falls down, the wire kind of pulls up and then chokes her to death.
Isn't there a shot even right before that where just her head comes through the stained glass window?
Yeah,
we see it from a distance, and it's just really unsettling. And her friend sees it from the bottom of this apartment building and just sees her friend's head come through the stained glass window. And then
just craziness. So then the glass shards fall down, and wouldn't you know it, the debris, the shards, they hit the roommate. She's dead too.
And it kills her in a very stylistic way. It's insane, like right through the face and just impaled and all the right places, and it's
goblins
right.
Music's just blaring.
Yeah. If you guys are a Halo fan, that's called a double kill.
Go away, Trevor.
So yeah, we were discussing off mic how that's, I would say, it's arguably the probably the coolest sequence in the film, the most memorable death of the film. And John, you were talking about how that was kind of a trend back then, right?
At the time, it wasn't, you know, it didn't happen a lot where the opening act would be so violent. But after this film, because it worked so well, a lot of other films kind of copied that kind of idea of like opening the film with like a bang and kind of introducing the characters more so after that. So that way has everyone's like hearts pumping, you know. I mean, watching this movie, you're like, well, I see why it caught on. It's perfect way to start a horror movie.
Yeah, that's interesting that kind of started a trend, and that was the first time it was done, because you see it in so many horror movies that, you know, the 90s, especially, I'm thinking of like the Scream movies, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
How like the first big kill would be the opening sequence, and then we would have the title and then meet the main character.
So like the all of this kind of has a background, is all indebted to Psycho, which has a main character that you see kind of go about, you know, her life. And then for the first like act or whatever, you know, she's steals money, goes to the Bates Motel, you know, gets killed. And like, that is like what most people remember the most from that movie, even though it's only like a small portion of the actual film itself. When Argento came onto the scene with Bird with the Crystal Plumage and Cat of Nine Tails, a lot of people were comparing him to like the Italian version of Hitchcock. So
interesting.
Well, you know, Hitchcock wasn't one that was, he wasn't nearly as gory as Argento, but
right,
you know,
right.
My Italian boy, he has to have fun. So
yeah, he had to shake it up with the gore. Is this considered his masterpiece or his, you know, biggest cult following? Like, where does it kind of fall in the rankings?
So a lot of people would say this is his best film. And there are like, there's kind of a minority of people that maybe would say his film before this, Deep Red, is his best. I've seen that movie. I like it, but it's not nearly as great as this one.
Okay, fair enough. So, Pat's dead, friend's dead. So it's only natural that we now talk about another death. So there's another girl at the academy named Sarah, who Susie kind of becomes friends with. And so at this point in the film, we realize that the person that Pat was talking to when she left the academy in the rain, mm-hmm, was Sarah. And she had basically revealed all of these things about the academy to her. You know, there's witches, there's, you know, a secret room, all this stuff. And so now Sarah's kind of feeling in danger, right?
Yeah. So Susie accidentally blabs to Madame Blanc that she heard something Pat said about blue irises or something that didn't quite make sense to her, but she kind of voiced concern to Madame Blanc. And Sarah's like, "You fool. Now they're going to be looking for another person."
Yeah.
"And that's me."
"It's me. What have you done?
Thanks a lot, jerk."
But meanwhile, like, Susie can't even help her because she's all like drugged out or something, right? She's like,
so she, I don't think we mentioned this, but like, they locked her. They wouldn't allow her into the building when she showed up because Pat's going all crazy, runs off. And then Sarah doesn't let Susie in because she's worried that she's going to do something. So Susie has to go, I guess she rents like a hotel room or something for the night.
Yeah. She just kind of, and so, like, okay, here I go.
So then there's some issues, and then they're like, "Hey, can you, we don't have, your room's not ready yet. So can you, go stay with Olga for a bit?" And
yeah,
Olga is not a nice lady.
No, she's not pleasant at all.
She's like, $50 a night. Or $50 a week. You pay that, right? She's like, "Yeah, I'll pay it. Don't worry." You know, she goes and she stays with Olga. The next day, she's told by Madame Blanc, like, "Okay, you can come and move in with us now if you want." She goes, "I mean, I'd rather just stay off campus if that's cool." She's like, "Whatever you want to do, Miss Individuality over here wants to do whatever she wants." And so then when
that's not okay with them.
No, well, they act like it's like, "Ooh, Miss Fancy American over here."
Yeah, they try to sway her.
Yeah, but so then while she's dancing, she has like a brain hemorrhage or something. And wouldn't you know it, now she's got to stay at the school.
what causes that?
I'm assuming the witches did a little hex on her.
Okay.
And then that's, so they make her like live on campus.
I just didn't see like when that happened. Because does anyone know like when that might have?
I think it was the point where the maid and that creepy doll child were together, yeah, and then they did the reflection with the light. They even kind of like did the sound cue of the witch, and then it gets shined in her eyes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When she's like, is that when she's like walking down the hallway?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
So that happens. And then they keep feeding her stuff that like knocks her out, and they keep giving her red wine for some reason. and it's not really like, they don't really address it ever what the big deal was about that. But basically it almost just felt like she was being too much of an individual. So like they wanted to like control her more.
Well, yeah, and when in reality they wanted her under their watch so they could perform, you know, whatever they needed to do,
mm-hmm.
for their rituals, and so they wanted her they wanted her in this academy, not off campus.
Mm-hmm. So then we got Sarah over here, and she's got some notes that Pat wrote about all this stuff going on with the witches, and you know, she's trying to tell Susie about it, and Susie starts dozing off like any good friend would, just dozing off.
John does that to me a lot. We actually cut out all the parts of the podcast where he falls asleep. They're typically 4 hours long.
Yeah, yeah. Last one was 6 hour process, so
fuck you guys. Anyway, so wait, there's a whole thing about the footsteps, right? Like
so at night they hear all of the teachers at the dance studio like going somewhere, like they hear footprints out in the hall, and it's Susie, right, that she points out that, you know, they're not going outside, they're not leaving, like they're going somewhere else in this building.
Yeah.
And we don't know where it is.
So Sarah tries to tell Susie about these notes that Pat had that are now missing. So she's worried about what's going on, that they're on to her. So she senses something. So she leaves Susie's room. And then you kind of, I guess there's like an assailant kind of following her that we don't really see who it is. But eventually she goes up into the attic. It follows her up there. She goes into a room. She closes the door. And then you see like a knife coming through trying to unlock the door in like a very slow way, but like right. Terrifying.
Yeah. It seemed like they could have just lifted a little higher.
Right. Yeah.
And gotten in. Because they cut to that shot like five times.
Yeah.
And each time I'm like, you're almost there. Just raise the knife. You're right, jiggling. Right,
right.
There's no need to jiggle. You just raise and you're in.
Imagine them pretty much just going like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And just like,
they're too excited. They're exactly, just shaking.
Exactly.
Sarah walks over and like unlocks it for him. She feels bad. Like, all right. Like, Sarah goes through a window, and then as she gets out of the window, she falls down, and there's all this razor wire everywhere.
What are the odds?
Razor wire storage room that all dance academies have. It's
of course,
standard.
Yeah, yeah.
And she couldn't get out of it, and unfortunately, the killer catches up to her, cuts her throat. And that's the end of Sarah.
R.I.P. Sarah. So what are the logical explanations of why that razor wire was there? It's not like something that was set up earlier in the film, like, oh, this people try to sneak into this academy all the time. We have razor wire everywhere. It's just, no, it's a entire room with a razor wire pit. It's like, it's perfectly set up for a scenario such as this.
What I actually thought it was, like a bunch of piano wire, because it makes sense because they have a bunch of pianos there. So maybe it's just a bunch of piano wires that just like, and just threw it in the room. So,
well, yeah, but then it wouldn't stick to her.
I mean, piano wire is pretty thick, so
yeah, but it wouldn't be like she wouldn't fall on it and go, ah.
So,
I wonder though, because I think we all would like to think that we have that kind of survival instinct that we would just be like, you fall in it, and then you're like, you know, fuck it, I'm getting out, and then you're like, you get the hell out of there. But
right.
Part of me would think like, I'm a baby, so like if I fall, I'm like, ugh, this hurts so much. Ow.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's easy getting out of razor wire.
Just get me. Just end it.
You win. Well, her first mistake was going to the attic. I think you wanna go down, right?
Yeah. I don't know what she was thinking. Especially like earlier there's like the maggots that are up there and stuff, and she's like, I'll go back up there with the maggots, you know.
We should touch on that too. At one point it kind of just starts raining maggots on the level where all of the dancers are sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And they attribute it to rotten food.
But why is that in the attic?
right.
But like,
refrigerate it.
Was that a spell, or was that just a thing that happened? And then they all end up sleeping in the gym, and it creates some cool like silhouettes.
Well, I was wondering if maybe that was an excuse to have Susie be near, Helena Marcos?
Right.
So that way she could kind of maybe sense more from her, see like maybe she's the one that she wants to, you know.
Okay, so we do think it might have been intentional. It wasn't just rotten food that was shipped to them. This was a spell.
I hope so, because otherwise they are not running a tight ship at all.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's... Whoever shipped that food, those maggots were there whenever they shipped it. That's not okay.
I feel like if it was not intentional, the Madame Blanc would be way more mad about it.
There's this kind of theme that always comes up, and it's thing that pops up a lot in psychology is when people are lying, they try to over-explain everything. And we get a lot of that from all the teachers at the school and, you know, all the heads of these classes and the heads of the school. And it's like, this is one instance where they try to like over explain it. So, you know, that makes you think more than likely it was a spell. And it's the same thing with when after Sarah's murdered, the next morning, Susie's like, yo, where's Sarah? And then they're like, oh, she packed her bags first thing this morning and left. And then like, right, Johnny, you heard her going down the hall, right?
Yeah.
Yep, I did. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. I heard footsteps and she went out the door to the right and she called a cab. It was a yellow cab, I believe. And it's just like,
I told her, where are you going? She says, I'm not going to answer that question.
there's just this theme of like over explaining all of their lies. And
some of their manipulation game is, it's okay, but a lot of it is like most of the girls in the school like are just way too trusting of these really bad liars. Like,
right.
They're like, well, that didn't make any sense, but I am living here for free, so
it is a prestigious school.
Yeah. I guess that's like makes sense though with like any college you would go to. Most students would be like, well, I mean, I guess that's
college.
That's odd. But all right, then.
And a lot of them are exchange students, too. So they're like, well, I guess it's what Germans do, I guess.
Yeah, that's how they do it in Germany.
These wacky Germans. So when Sarah goes missing, Susie contacts Sarah's friend and former psychiatrist, Frank. So she meets up with him, and this is where we get a little bit of an info dump about the school. And it was founded by this woman, Helena Marcos, who supposedly died in a fire in 1905.
We were talking about this off mic earlier. Frank, the former psychiatrist of Sarah, is not an expert on witchcraft, but conveniently, one of his colleagues who is passing by is.
He wrote the book on it, literally.
He wrote the book on it, yeah. So he reveals that this Marcos character was supposedly a witch.
And that key point of information, that a coven of witches will perish without a leader. Might come in handy later. We'll see. We'll see.
What if that was the moment where she kind of like just zoned out? She's like, oh, this guy.
She's just like, yak, whatever.
So the witches, he says the witch's goal is to accumulate personal wealth through injury to others or something along that lines. And this is like what we discussed earlier, how they can only change people's lives for the bad and not the good. So we know now that these are bad witches.
Madame Blanc kind of seems a little bit, not that she's like nice, but she has a little bit more of a warmer aesthetic to her than Miss Tanner, who I would say pretty clearly seems like a Nazi.
Madame Blanc, just for context, would be like the head of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then Miss Tanner would be like her second in command. And it's funny you bring up like she's a Nazi, because going back to the lighting and the set design, I feel like a lot of scenes where she pops up, she's framed in red. Mm-hmm. Did you guys notice that?
She
almost has like a red background behind her. I noticed that that kept popping up, and I'm sure it was intentional.
And I think that kind of plays into that, like, they're trying to create a connection between the witches and like the coven, like the secret coven, and then that of being like fascism, and it being kind of like this hidden thing that slowly, like, a student goes missing and we don't talk about that student anymore, you know?
Right.
And
right.
It has this hierarchy that, you know, you cannot challenge in any way or they'll get rid of you.
And there's also these constant justifications of why certain things are happening.
Well, it's also weird too, like at most people are just being like aware of like a secret door and like, oh, there's a secret door there. That's weird. And then they're like, she's dead. We're killing her.
It's probably the janitor's closet.
Hey, oh, there's also like a blind guy who does like the pianos, and
yeah, this poor guy.
Yeah, and then his dog accidentally bites, I think, Madame Blanc's nephew, so he gets fired because of this. And then, like, you know, poor guy is like out drinking a beer, trying to, you know, live his life. And then the witches attack him and make the dog kill him.
Doesn't he say something like, I may be blind, but I hear everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah, everything. Yeah.
So he's kind of saying, like, I know what goes on here. Like, I kept my mouth shut because you guys probably pay me okay to play the piano. But, you know, I know what goes on here. And I think that was kind of, you know, he sealed his own fate at that point.
Because it seems like these witches have a very strict snitches get stitches policy. So it's, you know, it's...
Speaking of, Trevor, your dog has been quiet for a while. Is everything okay?
Yes, yes.
The spell worked, guys.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. He opens the door. He goes, oh, hey, Oz. I think we're basically at the ending here. So Susie returns to the school, and it seems like no one's around because they all went to see a dance or something, right?
Yeah, no one told her. Not cool.
You know what? If that was the ending of the movie, I would have been like, yo, I feel that. That sucks. That's not a nice way to treat your friends, you know?
I'd even get the Facebook invite.
I mean, if that were me, I'd be like, yo, fuck this place, I'm out.
Yeah, so Susie just decides she wants to be part of the coven to get back at all of her classmates.
She gets attacked by a bat, and then that makes her think about Sarah telling her about the footsteps. So then she starts counting footsteps, and then she finds a door, secret door, in Madame Blanc's her office.
Her wall is kind of all painted and stylized with, you know, all these different flowers and trees and stuff like that. And
conveniently, Susie remembers exactly, clearly, what Pat said earlier.
Yeah, that. So up until this point, the only two words she remembered were secret and iris.
Yeah. And then she finds out that the secret, I saw it behind the door, three irises. Turn the blue one.
So, all right. How does she remember that? That's my, like, if.
Also, but like, here's the thing. You walk into there and you look around. You can clearly see there's one door there.
Yeah.
And it's by it's the like three outline. Irises.
And it's the only one that, like, protrudes off the wall. Yeah. So. Like, no, I'm just like,
I'm pretty sure you could have figured that out if you just walked into her office for like 10 seconds. Yeah. And be like, oh, there's a secret door there, clearly. I can hear everyone chanting behind that door.
See the hinges.
There's like, a lot of light coming from there.
But I know personally, if I had a first encounter, like, obviously it's a memorable first encounter with somebody. Somebody's storming out of a building in the rain. But if I only remembered two words at that point, or could only make out two words, I'm only knowing less from then on. I'm not ever knowing more.
Right.
And it's just like, I don't know if they were trying to say she remembered it, or if, like, I don't know, something in her head, like she could read her lips or something, but she somehow got the entire phrase and knew to open that door. But
I guess my thought was that maybe Marcos was like telling her what it was, so that way it can draw her in.
He thought they wanted her to come in.
Yeah, so that way they could get her.
Right.
Okay.
So she goes in, she goes through a corridor, and then she sees everyone talking shit on her, and they're like, oh.
Very conveniently. That's like the most convenient timing of the whole film. Like, right when she sees them, they're like, the American girl, she has to go.
Well, it's also, it's like a little catty, though. We're like, oh, I can't stand her.
Yeah, it's very petty. Yeah.
She smells like poop.
So she sees them. She sees that little kid that's like kind of, you know, a little turd. And she's like, all right, let me go through this other door. So she goes to the other door, and who's in there? Was that Sarah's body?
Yeah, Sarah's body.
Yeah, Sarah's body.
Oh, Sarah's body's there. And, you know, that's not cool. That's her friend.
Yeah.
And then she hears some weird breathing again, and then she goes through another door, and there's Helena Marcos, who supposedly died in 1905 in a fire, but she is hooked up to a CPAP machine. And anyway, so she goes in there. Marcos wakes up, coughs a lot, whatever. And she decides, oh, I'm going to reanimate Sarah over here and scare the shit out of you. And so she disappears. Marcos disappears. And
like literally she turns invisible.
Yeah. And then, but she's lazy enough that she doesn't get up out of her bed.
She doesn't move and she continues to talk. Right. And you can see her indentation in the mattress still.
So and you probably can smell her.
Yeah. Maybe she couldn't stand up. I don't know. She seems old and frail.
Yeah.
We'll give her the benefit of the doubt on that one. But, you know, just a note to our listeners, if you want to hide when you're invisible, don't sit on anything that would give away your location.
Yes.
Pro tip.
Yeah. Pro tip. And, you know, Susie, being the badass she is, just stabs Marcos while she's invisible. And wouldn't you know it, the story we heard before about a coven can't survive without, like, its head witch. So...
we told you that would come back.
Oh, man. We told you. Oh, man. So then the whole building starts like imploding and people are dying and it's pretty metal. So she runs out. She gets out of there. She kind of it's an interesting like kind of ending where she kind of is like she's crying, but she's like kind of happy it's over. It's kind of like a mixture of emotions.
A lot of emotions. Yeah. And it's interesting, too, what reveals Marcos being invisible as there's lightning and she's kind of silhouetted by the lightning, right? Because you can kind of see her outline. But my thought is, you know, she's on the bed. You can see that and you can hear her. Why not just like start stabbing everywhere? Yeah, you know, it's like she doesn't need to be revealed. I mean, that might have saved her a couple seconds, might have saved her the guesswork.
It's her first murder. Guys,
yeah,
she's not used to doing these murders.
Yeah.
So,
and it looked cool.
It did.
For the sake of the film.
It did. Yeah. And it's pretty crazy, like just the practical effects of like the building like kind of breaking down, like it works really well.
Oh yeah.
Right. And then like also at the end, like during the credits, you hear people screaming. So that's all the other witches dying and burning. Mm-hmm. So I think that was also pretty metal. So and then they have goblin, like the goblin music playing too. So it was pretty good.
Hell yeah.
So what was their goal? Was their goal to get Marcos into Susie's body? Is that...
I feel like it's not... I don't think it's overtly stated, but I guess that's the implication is probably that. Because right. It seems like they're obsessed with her and...
Well, I feel like they should have had a little bit stronger of like a guard or something... with Marcos, because she clearly is incapable of defending herself. Like Susie beat her quite easily. Like if it's true that if Marcos dies, the whole coven is screwed.
Yeah.
Then, you know, maybe put her under lock and key. Right. Like it's almost like Marcos was like, all right, I haven't seen some spell action in a while. I'm invisible and your friend's alive and going to try to kill you. It's almost like boredom caught up with her and then like she killed everybody.
Right, right. It's like the Death Star vent, you know, like you just like, yeah, why don't we just put a bunch of stuff there, you know, block it. Don't worry about it.
It's okay. This is just a general question about invisibility. So if any of our listeners have any insight, feel free to chime in. In order to be invisible, do you have to be naked? Or does anything touching your person become invisible?
I would think it depends on like what the source is to make you invisible. Like if it's a superpower, I would think probably, yeah. But if it's like sorcery of some kind, I think it's a blanketed kind of thing. Like, yeah, you just wear anything and just you're good.
I feel like it should apply to clothing just for the fact, like, I don't know. How lame would it be if it's like, oh, I can be invisible, but I have to be naked? Then it's like, if you're walking anywhere with people, you feel like a pervert.
Right, right.
Like,
yeah, it's like, do you turn invisible first and then you're just clothes walking or do you get naked first?
Yeah.
That's a dilemma.
I don't know. But like, what if like your concentration messes up and then all of a sudden, like they see you again and then it's like, oh... Trevor over here, he's on a sex offenders list because his spell didn't work for too long.
Right. Okay.
I thought you'd say something.
I was just like, Trevor's like, sounds right. All right.
I just kept telling people that you're holding my hand. So
how would we compare this cult to like the cults of the other movies that we've watched?
Until this point, we've been dealing a lot with satanic cults.
Mm-hmm.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time we've done a movie that features a coven of witches, correct?
Well, so I think Rosemary's Baby is a coven, but like they're pretty like, you know, down with the devils.
So it's both, yeah. It's very heavily, I mean, their end game was to have like a demon child. So
mm-hmm.
I would say that would be first and foremost, they're a satanic cult with a side of
mm-hmm.
witchcraft.
And I mean, and plus like they have like their coven of witches. But like men can be witches, so it's a little bit more progressive. Here, I think it's mostly just women are witches and the men are servants.
They're goons.
Hired goons, yeah, exactly. So, you know, I feel like, I don't know, I kind of wish we got a little bit more of like the inner workings of this this coven of witches. Like, mm-hmm. you know, what's their day-to-day life like? What are their goals? What are their hopes and dreams?
And as kind of an everyman who doesn't know a lot about witchcraft, I'm interested in what goes into these spells. And because it's like in movies like this, they're all so automatic
mm-hmm.
and they're just kind of part of the film. And I know every now and then we see kind of like glimpses of what goes into them, but you know, I would have kind of liked to see more overtly what goes into some of these spells. Something that's personally interesting to me.
Next week, we'll be reviewing the remake, which goes a little bit more into that. So that'll be...
This is very true.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Jason, from what I'm gathering, and I know this is going to be surprising to our viewers, you're probably not going to join this cult, right?
I'm going to go with no. for a number of reasons. First of all, it doesn't seem like they're very welcoming to males. The kind of the only males we see are kind of these big goofs that kind of just bumble around. I don't know. I don't think that it would be easy for me to climb in the ranks. But Trevor, what are the male witches called?
Warlocks.
Warlocks. So yeah, I don't know if I got what it takes to be a warlock. I'd have to think about that a little more.
There's no hired goon to warlock pipeline.
So yeah, it's going to be a no from me. Yeah. How about you guys?
Well, I'd probably join this cult because, you know, I'm going to look at it like wow. kind of like a fixer upper. I'm like, well, you know, there's a lot of things we can do with this. So let me, you know, work at this, you know. I mean, yeah, probably I'll be a goon, but I don't mind being lord of all goons because, like, you know, a lot of them are, you know, you got like a child that's a goon, and you got, you know, this guy who has lost his teeth because he has gingivitis, which is kind of a weak excuse to lose your teeth, to be honest. And it's just, I mean, it just feels like, you know, this is a rudderless ship, and we, you know, we could patch these things up, you know, we can
franchise. So you're looking at the potential here,
right? We can franchise this, you know, we can, you know,
fixer-upper,
like
yeah.
why limited
franchise?
Yeah, why limited to Germany? Why can't we have one in England and France and in the U.S. You know, why not both East Coast and West Coast? Come on, guys,
diversify a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly, like, you know, and then, you know, maybe we can vote Marcos out, you know, make her, like, you know, step down, and then, you know, just put on a better board of directors on this, you know, this coven, you know, and then kind of make it more of, you know, just maybe even just go public. Who knows?
It's kind of sounding like you just want to run a dance school at this point, almost.
No, he wants to be the lead hired goon.
But yeah,
you have a few goons to work through, though, so you're pretty confident
yeah.
you could take
oh, yeah.
on.
Yeah, come on,
the existing
on.
Goons.
I don't okay. have tough competition right. here. Come on,
the well, the one kid, like the little cousin or nephew guy, like he could, Trevor could beat him up easily.
Oh, I could. God,
I hope so.
You could get a Lethal Weapon fight him. I could be like a Lethal Weapon movie, you know, or just like right in the middle of the yard, just boom, boom, boom.
And what was this, Pavlos? He's he doesn't really know what's going on. I think you're fine. I think you could do it.
I could trip him. He'll be done.
Yeah.
So, John, I have a feeling we all know what's coming, but Would you join this cult?
Well, gentlemen, I feel as though I must admit something. In life, I've always wanted two things: the power to vanquish my enemies and to be an excellent dancer. With this cult, I can do both. And I think it's a great opportunity that I can't pass up. So I'm a yes.
I'm here for the dance lessons, man. I want to see those. Like, I don't even know if there's a spell in the world that could give you the dance moves that you want. Right.
Sir, you've seen me on the dance floor at...
That's true, at John can cut a rug.
Yeah. Yeah. For a very obese man, I can do...
Yeah, John can get down. He's always double fisting. He always has two beverages.
Because I need those. I am so not confident in my dance skills. I need those alcoholic beverages to make me less aware of how goofy I look when I'm dancing. So
I can't wait to see this at my wedding.
So, all right. Well, I think that about does it for this week's episode. Everyone, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And next week, we will be reviewing Suspiria, the remake. 2018 film.
Yeah, so we're kind of shifting gears from more of the classics to more of the modern cult films.
Absolutely, Jason. That's a great thing to bring up that I did not think about. Yes. So we will be doing that next week. And until then, stab you later. No, sorry. Sorry, guys. I'm letting everyone down. The goddamn dog.
Sorry.
Can you kill it? Like... God.